Okay, we're starting here on the top of Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. We're continuing with the sugya yesterday about Rav Nachman, which Rav Nachman, when explaining the Mishnah, told us that the reason that the maskir always has the upper hand when we have a safek is because the karka is bechezkat balei kayemet. And we have another statement from Rav Nachman which reflects a similar sentiment. So if you're looking two, three, four lines down on the Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph, it says, Amar Rav, Amar Rav Nachman, Hayman de ogerle beita lechavre, leesr shnin. Someone rents out his house or a property to an individual for 10 years. Vekantiv leishtoro, and he wrote a document to evidence the fact that he rented it out to him for 10 years. Ve'amarle, now the problem, I'm going to read now according to Rashi, and this is, the Rabbeinu Chananel has two interpretations. Rashi and the first interpretation in the Rabbeinu Chananel are the same, which is that there was no date in the shtar. So they wrote a shtar evidencing the fact that he had rented it out for 10 years, but they don't know when the start day is. So then this individual shows up and says, Amarle, nikita at chamesh shnin. And the maskir, the landlord, comes up and says, you've already lived in it for 5 years. And the tenant says, no, it's only 3 years. I've only been there for 3 years. So Gemara says, Mehemin, he's believed. So in this instance, the way we're reading it now is the landlord is believed to say that the 5 years that he's lived there, that is up to the landlord. Why? So again, this is the same din that we saw from Nachman before, because the karka b'chezkat balei omedet, and therefore he's neman when it comes to issues dealing with the karka. So Amarlei Ravacha Midifti the Ravina, according to the way you're explaining it, Elamiato, if that's the case, Osfe Meazuze Bishtara, someone lends 100 zuz with a shtar, Vamarlei Paraticha, and then he says, I paid it, Paraticha Palga, I paid you back half. Hachanami de Mehemen? Now you're going to believe him to say that? That he paid back half of it? Amarlei Hachi Hashta, how can you compare the cases? Hotam, by the case of the loan, Shtar de Guvanina Kai. Right, so the point, the whole point of the shtar, the whole reason to have the shtar is so that one can collect with the shtar. Imita de pare, if the individual really had paid him back, then he boile the michtecha agabe. He should have written, something should have been written on the shtar itself, or inami michtevele tavra, or he should have had some sort of shovar. He should have had a receipt that indicates that he had made payment on the shtar. So what's the claim? The comparison that Rav Acham Idifti is trying to suggest here is that if you always go after the muhzak, in our case the maskir, the landlord, is the muhzak because of the karka. In a case of a loan, it's the borrower who's muhzak because he has the money in his hand. So if you always, the muhzak's believed, when the borrower says, I paid back half, how come we don't believe him in that instance? When it says, well, those cases, Ravina suggests back to him that the cases are really not comparable. Because in the case of the shtar by the loan, the whole point of the shtar is the evidence, or basically to be moral of chazaka. The whole point of the shtar is to say that the chazaka doesn't apply, and that's why I have a shtar, so I can come and collect from you. And if you did pay me back, then you have to do something to take away that value of the shtar, either by having a receipt or having it written on. Aval hocha, in our case over here, amarlei, haydech tiv lecha shtara, the whole reason I have a shtar is geicha de lo techzek alei, that the whole purpose or reason for the shtar being here is the lo tema lekucha hu yibiyati. That's the major reason for the shtar, is so that you can't come and make a claim that you actually bought it. Ah, so why is the shtar in the hand of the socher? The reason the shtar is in the hand of the socher is so that shlokesh lecha cheshbon hashanim, so that I can't deny you the number of years that you're entitled to as a tenant. But nevertheless, the ikar hashtar, the main part of the shtar, is b'shvili nichtav, it's written for me, the maskir can say. And if that's the case, because ayidei kein yish kol shemashkanta hu etzlecha, because through the shtar, people will be aware of the fact that you don't own this land, you didn't purchase it, but you're simply renting it, you're a tenant. And so since the main purpose of the shtar is for my benefit, then it can't come to undermine the chazaka I have here. And so because of that, right, the property or the maskir is neman because he's muhzak in the karka, and the shtar, in a sense, is upholding that, is enhancing that situation by saying that it's only a rental and that the real balabayit is the maskir. So that's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel has a different interpretation which reads the Gemara in exact opposite. And if you look in Tosfos, actually, you can see it's right across from where it says, Amar le Rav Acham Idifti le Ravina in the Gemara. It says, Loshen Sheni Per Shvach, Vezeh Leshono, Yesh Omrim, Shekatu Bishtar Zman, Kach Vekach Scharti, Chatzero Shel Ploni, Eser Shanim. Right, so that there is a time that's written in the Shtar. Right, Bekuf Dinarim. the whole 10 years for Kuf Dinarim, Yud Dinarim B'chol Shana. It's 10 dinar per Shana. V'achar Heishanim, after 5 years, Toena Socher. This is now on from the Socher is Toen. Ramar Lamaskir, and he comes to the landlord, the tenant comes to the landlord, and says, Nikita Tzchirut Socham Heishanim. I've already paid you for 5 years worth of rent. V'asikna Dineman, Asocher Neman Ubishvua. So the way the Rach is reading it over here, it's not that the maskir is believed, right? The first lashon, the way we read it according to Rashi, is it's that the landlord's making the statement, and the landlord's saying, you already lived there for 5 years, so you only have 5 years left, and the tenant's saying, no, I lived there for three, I have 7 years left. And then we say that the maskir, the landlord's believed because of the chezkat hakarka. On the other hand, the parashani of the Rach says, no, it's the socher who's making the claim here, and why does the socher want more years to pass? Because he owes him money. He owes him 10 dinar per year. So he says to him, I already paid you for 5 years. And the landlord says, no, you only paid me for 3 years. You still owe me for the rest. So there we say that the socher is ne'eman u'bishvua. And Tosa says, u'mistavra, that this, ki hai perusha batra. He says that this second lashon, or the Rach says, the second lashon is better. Lashon zenira ikar, why? Chada deben ne'emanot socher ha'omer sheparas chirut aire. Nami Dilel, right? The statement right before was when we have a difference between the maskir and the socher, who do we believe when they have a difference? On the day of payment, who is believed? And the Gemara just concluded that the socher is believed in that instance. He takes a shvat hesed when it's kofar bakom. So if this Gemara also suggests that who's Neman, the socher is Neman. So that would be a continuation or would flow well with the previous Gemara. Right, and then the second reason he says, "Oh, the hash nechetve mash amr maskana makes more sense in the conclusion." Shelo naaseh shtar leguvaino. The whole purpose of the shtar is not for collection. El kadesh shelo yachzik hasocher. The whole purpose of the shtar here is that so the socher would not have it be permanent. The fish says, "Star yeshno biyada maskir." According to this lashon, right, who is holding the shtar over here? The maskir is holding the shtar to prove that this is only a rental and not a sale. So the shtar is actually not a shtar that was given to the socher, but rather given to the maskir. As opposed to in the first lashon, where the shtar was given from the maskir, the landlord, to the socher, for the socher to prove that he has 10 years, meaning that he has a right to rent the property, and the landlord can't just kick him out any time. So that's what Tosla says. It's obvious that, and the gra actually changes the gear. So if you read, Gihecha Dolo, according to the Rach, is Achazik Alech. So that it would read, so that I am not machzik on you, because it's referring to the socher, that he's not machzik on the landlord to say that I bought it and it's mine now. So the shtar is actually being held by the landlord. Now again, according to the first lashon, I told you, I think that you could still read in the continuum of the Gemara, because this is Rav Nachman the Shitato, that the maskir always has cheskas akarko, and that's what the Gemara is referring to. It also says that he likes it better, that it flows from the previous Gemara, that the socher is always neman. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Nachman, Shu'el Adam B'Tovo Le'olam. That a person can be Shu'el Adam B'Tovo. Now what this Tovo is, Rashi says the word Tovo here means the Hay Tovo Mashma Kozman Shehu Tov. Anytime that it's good, right, then I can use it. I want to borrow this as long as the item is still good, which means forever. I basically want to borrow this item forever. So that's Mashma Kozman Shehu Tov. So if someone borrows such an item with such a lashon, it means that first of all, he may borrow it, and then forever. And if he returns it, he can still go back and ask for it again, because he's borrowed it from this individual. That's the way Rashi reads the word Tovo. Tosus brings a from the Aruch, that is, Betova Shemachzik Hashoel L'Mashil. For the goodwill that the borrower expresses towards the lender, Yachol Hashoel Ishtamesh Lo'olam B'Kelav. He can use it forever. Shemashiova ein nira. Tosa says he doesn't like this lashon. The Rush also rejects this type of interpretation of the word tuvo. Now, this is shola adam bituvo. When he uses this term tuvo, it means forever. So it means leolam. That's what the Gemara is saying. So now, Amar Rav Mari bra debat Shmuel. So, right, Rav Mari, who is the son of the daughter of Shmuel. So if you remember, we had this on the Gemara, and I on top of Ayin Gimel Amud Bet, the Gemara over there told us that, and we used this expression, and Rashi explained to us why. If you remember from the Gemara in Ketubot, right, that the daughters of Shmuel were Nishbet, that they were taken into captivity, and Rav Mori was actually born from Isur Giura, who was a non-Jew when he was conceived, converted, and then Rav Mori is born when he was already Bikdusha. So in order to, you know, I don't guess protect or to be say it in a nice way, they always reflect Rav Mori through Bra Debat Shmuel, through his mother, because there she was Jewish all the way through, as opposed to his father, who converted after he was already conceived. So now, Rav Mari Bar Rav Shmuel says, V'hu dekani mine. That's as long as he makes a kinyan on it. Now, it's clear to me, the Rush already asks on this, and he says, what's the kinyan here? The way Rashi explains it, Rashi says that if he doesn't make a separate kinyan here, then when he returns it after the first time, it's returned forever, and he can't take it back. According to the other Mishonim, that means even if he doesn't return it, he's not allowed to keep it anymore, because he didn't make a kinyan on the item. Now, this kinyan that he makes on the item has to be something that seems to be in addition to the normal kinyan of a shoel. Because what Rashi says over here, he says, well, if he returns it to him, then it wipes out the original kinyan meshicha. So he needs a separate, what it seems to be, and that's, I think, what the Rush is asking is, well, you know, what is this kinyan here? You always have to make a kinyan meshicha when you take something to be shoel. So it seems to me that it has to be another kinyan on top of the normal kinyan that a shoel would make to take the object in order to give tokif to the statement that he's borrowing it forever. So in order to do that, in order to be machzik diburo, right, to give a kiyum to what he's stating, then we say take another kinyan, and we do that kinyan. That kinyan will then put into place the fact that now you can borrow it forever, and not simply the kinyan meshicha allows you to borrow it just for this time until you return it to the ba'alim. All right, so Amar of Mari Breid Ravashi, Umahadr Le Kate. So Rav Mari Barashi says, wait, now when you say betuvo, the way Rashi is defining it is as long as the item is still working. Now what happens if he took, like, borrowed an axe? It has a handle, and it has a blade. So he works with the axe forever, and then the blade finally becomes dull or unusable. So now he's left with the handle. So he has to return the handle to the original owner, because now, since the item is no longer functional, then it's not betuvo. So whatever's left over, after he's used it, while it's functional, he has to return to the original owner. So his right to use is a right of usage is simply when it's functional. That means that he can't go and then fix it and then continue to use it, because he borrowed it bituvo. Tuvo means as long as it's functional, I can still use it. And so those are the qualifications here. He has to use the word tuvo, has to have a separate kinyan, and he has to return whatever's left over when it's not functional anymore. No, I think it has to be affirmed. The Rosh asked that question. He says, whatever kinyan should work for Sheila, should work also over here. He doesn't understand. My assumption is that maybe a kinyan sudar, they have to do some formalization of the deal between them that is independent of a normal meshicha that you would do on the metaltalim. Not that, I mean, I think that's what it means here. So you do a kinyan sudar in addition to the meshicha. Okay, Amar Rava. Rava says, Hai mund amar le lechavrei, Oshlan mara the mirpek pei hai pardesa. Lend to me a spade in order to loosen the ground or to shovel up in this orchard. Then he's only allowed to rafik pei hau pardesa. Then he can only loosen the ground in that particular pardes, because he said that he says in this pardes. So the person lent him the item to use in that orchard. Therefore, he can only loosen in that orchard. On the other hand, if he says pardesa. If he didn't say hi, meaning defining which pardes, but he says the generic term pardes any orchard, then rafik bay kol pardes de bay, then he can go ahead and use this spade for any orchard that he finds suitable or that he feels is the orchard he want to do. Since he didn't define which orchard, then the borrower can then determine which orchard he chooses to use it in. If he says pardesai, where he uses the possessive form, then rafik vazil kol pardesai. And he can go and do anything that he owns, he can do. And if through that process he wears down the whole shovel, he can just hand him back the handle afterwards. So again, the chiddush here of pardesai is that we don't just say that pardesai, since it's in plural, means two. Right? But we say pardesai means any field that I own, I'm allowed to work with. If he says hai pardesa, if he says this particular orchard, then he can only work that orchard. And if he just uses pardesa rafik bay, then he can do whatever, if he doesn't define which pardes, he can do any pardes. And as Rashi points out over here, he can even pick a pardes the size of Godol Kantochia, right? Anyone, he hasn't defined the size of the orchard, so he can pick the biggest orchard in the world, and he can go and use it there, because he hasn't defined which orchard it is. So that's the three different Lashonot you can use. The Gemara is telling us what rights does that give you. So now, the next one, hi, I'm saying, Amara Papa. Rabba says that person who says to his friend, lend me, hi garguta, that lend me this What it seems to be here is a well, but it's a well that is dug into the ground to reach a spring. There's a natural spring underneath, or water that's flowing underneath, and they dig down to open up this well. So he lends him this water to feed the fields. Venufla, and it collapses in. So what happens if he says to him, Ushlim Haigraguta, this particular well, or this water hole, I want you to lend to me, and then it collapses, Lo Bunila. He doesn't have a right to rebuild the water hole, or to use it after it's collapsed, because he said, this water hole. On the other hand, if he just says, Garguta, I want a water hole, Vinafla, and then it falls in, then Bunila, he can replace it, he can rebuild it. Rebuilding it, I'm assuming, means when you dig a water hole that you have to reinforce the walls that are around it in order so that it doesn't collapse again. So that means Bunila, that he has permission to rebuild it because he borrowed the water hole. He didn't say this one in particular, he just says access to the water. And so since it's access to the water, he can rebuild it to gain access to the water. If he says, Be Garguta, if he says, I want a, what sounds, seems to be over here, right, lend me a place that I can get access to water, right, I mean, that means anywhere in this area I want access to water, then Koriva Azil Kama Gargute Ba'are Admitramile, right, then he can dig as many water holes as he needs until he gets to the water. I mean, he can dig as many times or as many holes as he needs until he reaches the water, because he's basically got an access to the land to get to the water. And so if that's the case, he has rights or to do any of that. Bitzarech the mikne mine. And again, the qualification over here, in order for this to go through, you need a kinyan. I mean, in order for this sheila to stand up to the test of not of time or of just doing it, otherwise it's just dvarim, otherwise it's just words over here. So in order to be machzik, the item, and to establish or affirmatively make it into a formal kinyan, you have to create some sort of kinyan over here so that he has rights to the waterhole and not have it be simply dvarim or words between these two parties. Okay, now, the next Mishnah. A maskir by the chavero, v'nafal. Person rents out a house to his friend, then it falls down. Chayav lamid lo bayit. He has to replace the house. Hayak katan lo yasenu gadol. If it was a small house, he can't make it a big house. Now, gadol yasenu katan. If it was a big house, he can't make it small. Echad lo yasenu shnayim. If it was one house, he can't make it into two now. Shnayim lo yasenu echad. If it was two houses, he can't make it into one. Lo yifchot min achalonot. He can't reduce the number of windows. Lo yosif alehem. And he can't increase the number of windows. El midat shnehem. They both have to agree. Both parties have to acquiesce for there to be any changes in the house. So Gemara says, hey, chidami, what's the case over here? Id amrle bayitzeh. Right, if he says this house, I'm renting you this house, nafal asule. If it falls down, it's too bad because he said this house doesn't exist anymore. Idam le bayit stam. If he says I'm renting you a house, period. Right, then echad amaylo yasenu shnayim. Why, if there's one house, can he make it into two? Katan amaylo yasenu gadol. If it's small, why can't he make it big? All he's obligated himself to do is provide a house. If he has to provide a house, no matter what they haven't defined any dimensions or type of house, he just says, I'll provide you with a house. So Amar Reish Lakish, Darmalei, Bayit Shani, Maskir Lecha, Midat Arko, Kach V'Kach. Now basically, Reish Lakish says, he says that I am renting you the house, and these are the dimensions, or he gives some sort of description about the house that he's going to rent to him. Amar says, Yehochi Maile Memra. Then what's the Chiddush anymore? Of course he has to replace the house exactly like what he promised him, with the same sort of dimensions. Elikiyata Rav and Amresh Lakish, Darmalei, Bayit Kazeh Ani Maskir Lecha. So he points to a house, or he indicates this house, he says, a house similar to this I will rent to you. So then he has to replace it. If it's not there anymore, he's got to replace it with a similar house. Gemara says, Vakati Maile Memra. If that's the case, what's the Chiddush again? Of course he has to replace the house. Now, Lo Tzricha Dekoya Guda Denaro. Now, that the house is beachfront property. It's right on the river. Maudutema, what do I thought? My kazeh. My sense to him, I will rent you a similar house that he's referring to location. The kaya guda denaro. That when he says kazeh, he's not telling you in particular this exact house, but he's saying a house in this location. The Kamash Malan is, no, when he says kazeh, we say kazeh refers not only to the location, but also to all the particulars of the house. That means size, windows, all the other things. When he says kazeh, the renter has in mind all of those items, and then for when he replaces it, he's got to replace all of those items in the exact way, unless, of course, the tenant agrees to otherwise. All right, now the new perek. I finished perek Shmini, now we're starting the new perek. Hamakabel Sadeh Michavero. person who accepts a field from his friend to work. Now, over here, we're going to see this later in the Gemara, but here, mikabel, generally the word kablanut is used for arisim, for sharecroppers. Over here, a mikabel can be either for a choker or for an aris. Aris is a sharecropper, and a choker, we just saw right the other day in the Gemara, a choker is someone who pays a fixed price every year, fixed amount of produce each year, no matter what the production or the field or whether he plants nothing. The sharecropper is a percentage of the output of the field. So the Gemara says about these individuals who accept fields to work them, either for fixed price or for percentage. Makom shenagud iktzor iktzor, in a place where they harvest by cutting the items, then they can do that. La'akor, in a place where they harvest by uprooting the item, then ya'akor, he has to do that. Lachrosh achrav, if the place has a minhag to plow after, right, the harvesting is already done, then, or lachrosh achrav, yachrosh, then he's got to plow afterwards. Hakol, k'minhag ha-medina. Everything's based on the minhag of that place, their agreement, or their, whatever their relationship is dictated by the minhagim of that area. So just like they divide up the tevuah, right, the output, which means the final production, they also divide up the tevin and the kash. They will also divide up the byproducts of the field in order between them. And this obviously has to be a case where we're talking about an aris or a sharecropper, because it's not relevant by a chocher. If it's a vineyard, just like they split the wine, or again, the production, the output of the field, they also divide the zmurot, which is the branches that were pruned, right? So the wood that comes off those branches. Ubikanim, and the stakes. The stakes in the ground are the trellises which hold up the vines. They'll split the wood that does that. Ushnehem mesapkim et akanim. And both of them, meaning both the balabait and the aris, the sharecropper, have to provide the stakes or the trellises in order to put the vines on. So now the Gemara says, Tana, makom shenagu liktzor in rashai la'akor. In a place, right, where they normally harvest by just cutting the items down, then he doesn't have the right to uproot the item. Le'akor, on the other hand, if it's a place where they harvest by uprooting the item, in Rosh HaLiktzor, then he doesn't have permission to cut it down. Ushnehem makvim zel zeh. They both can object to either way. Liktzor, right, if it's a place where they cut down, in Rosh HaLiktzor, he can't uproot it. Why? Hayamar be'ina detitvan li arai. Because the owner can say, listen, I want you to leave the residual in the field because it'll help to fertilize the field, meaning that the leftovers, whatever you cut, the roots and the dried out plants or that are left will end up fertilizing the field for the next year. V'hai amalei, and the sharecropper can say, lo matzina lakor, says I don't want to have to expend the additional energy to come and uproot, meaning that harvesting is much easier than simply cutting, is much easier than uprooting. Inorashai liktzor, I'm sorry, lo matzina, sorry, I read it wrong. Hayamar lo matzina, he says, I'm not willing to do it. Le'akor, on the other hand, if the minag medina is to uproot, inorashai liktzor, then he can't harvest by simply cutting. Hayamar be'ina dinakir arai. The owner can say, I want my field totally clean. I want it, you know, fresh for the next year, and therefore I want it uprooted entirely. V'hayamar be'ina tivna. And the sharecropper can say, listen, I want to uproot it. I don't want to leave it because I want to take whatever is uprooted, the residual, which is not useful in terms of the production, whether it's, you know, the wheat, the kernels, whatever's left over will be the tevin. That leftover I can use for other purposes. Ushnehem makvin zeh zeh lamali. So then, why is it saying shnehem makvin zeh lamali? We just explained through the basic premise that they both could be ma'akev because they both have a taina here. So Gemara says, no, matam kamar. It's explaining to you the shnehem makvin zeh zeh is the matam. Matam liktzor in rasha lakor, lakor in rasha liktzor. What's the reason that's when the minhag is to cut, you can't uproot, and the place the minhag is to uproot, you cannot cut? Mishum d'shnei mekvim zel zeh. The reason that you can't switch is because both parties have a valid claim here. And since both parties have a valid claim, therefore you're not permitted to go ahead and alter what the minhag medina is. All right. Now it says if the minhag midina is lachroshach rav yachrosh. If the minhag midina is to plow afterwards, then he has to plow. The Gemara says pshita. If that's the minhag midina, what's the question? Lotzricha ba'atra delo menachashe. It's a place where the sharecropper is not obligated to weed the field. Vazo ihu v'nochish. And despite that, the sharecropper went ahead and weeded the field. So in that case, he says maudatema. What I have thought. Amalai hayde nechishna adata delo krivnala. The reason that I did the weeding early on was so that I wouldn't have to plow it in the back end. Kamash Malan, the conclusion, or what our mission is teaching us, is that's something you have to make explicit. Meaning that we don't make any assumptions. Because the minhag medina is to plow afterwards, just because you thought when you weeded it that that would exempt you from plowing, that's not enough. If you want to go against what is the normal business practices of this area, you have to explicitly agree that if I weed it, I won't have to go ahead and plow it later. Now, to be honest with you, this way I would have simply read the Gemara is that the purpose of plowing afterwards is to clear, to uproot all the bad roots that are left there and all the weeds that are left there. So if he weeds, right, then that would be the equivalent of plowing, meaning that he's accomplished the same goal through weeding instead of plowing. Rashi says something interesting over here, I don't know. Rashi says that he weeds in the middle, while it's still growing, he goes ahead and weeds. Later on, some of them grew back, a little bit grew back, so he has to plow for that reason. So it seems from Rashi, the conclusion would be, if he actually did uproot it, if he actually did weed it out, that he wouldn't have to plow it. It's only if he weeded it, and now there's some residual weeds that come back, then he has to plow it. Again, Pashut, I would not read the Gemara that way, but Rashi says that if he does physically weed it, and it accomplishes the same goal in the end, it would be enough, and he would not have to plow again.
I would think that in general, you would accept that plowing is more thorough than weeding.
I agree. I'm not sure why, but Rashi does what he does, and it sounds like from Rashi that if he simply weeded at the end of the process and he cleared everything off, that would be sufficient. And I agree with you. I would assume that weeding and plowing are either different. They do have the same, again, end game, which is that the finished product is similar, but again, one, like you're saying, one is more thorough or deeper or more extensive. So I would think that he could demand the plowing even in the face of him weeding at the end. All right, so now the Gemara says, Akol kamin haga medina. Everything, the Mishnah states that everything is kamin haga medina. So akol latuye mai. The Mishnah already listed items. So now what's the akol over here? Latuye haide tanu rabbanan. It comes to include that which we learned. Makom shenagula askiri lanot, agabe karka maskirin. Makom sheena agula askir, ein maskirin. So now the Gemara says that generally a sharecropper gets land, and he's planting, he's doing something there. He happened to get land from the Balabayit that also has trees on it. And these trees produce fruit without any really input from the sharecropper. Meaning that they just basically every year they produce fruit. So the question is, when he gives the land to the sharecropper to work, are the fruits included? Are the fruits included as a bonus to the sharecropper that he gets to also take part of the fruits? So that's what the Mishnah is saying, that we include. Makom shenagu, that's it. Makom shenagu laskiri lanot al gabei karkar maskirim. If the trees are included, then it goes ahead, it's included. Makom shenagu laskirim maskirim. So Gemara says, wait a minute. Makom shenagu laskir maskirim, pshita. Of course, that's pashut. If that's the minhag medina, what's the question here? Lo tzricha de kuliyama yave betilta. Most people give over the land, right, to the sharecropper at a third. And over here, he gave it over in a fourth. Now, on this case over here, everywhere else in Shas, right, when we talk about a third and a fourth, it's referencing the sharecropper himself. That the sharecropper takes the lower percentage. I mean, that Balabai gets the majority of the output, and the sharecropper for working the land gets a percentage, like a third or a fourth. Over here, the Gemara is the third and the fourth is what's going to the Balabait. Right, Tosus raises the issue right away. He took top Tosus tema. The achamash of the balabayit shokel pachot min aris. Here it sounds like the balabayit takes like aris. Ubechol duchte masha sharis nochel pachot. Everywhere else in Shas is just the opposite. So Tosus comes up with the hechi timsa. He basically makes an ukimta. This is something that we saw earlier in the mesechta about whether the sharecropper has to provide the seeds or doesn't provide the seeds. So Tosus says makes that differentiation that everywhere else in Shas is talking about a case where the sharecropper does not have to provide the seeds, and therefore the Balad Bayit gets the majority of the output. Over here in our case, it's the sharecropper is providing the seeds, and since he provided the seeds, he gets the majority. Right? But Tosfos is just coming up with an akimta. It's just, it happens to be strange, but the Gemara reads that way, so we'll read it that way. So the case here is that the Balad Bayit says that generally, every Balad Bayit takes a third. Over here, I only took a quarter, meaning that I gave you three quarters instead of two-thirds. So Ma'udatema, what I would say to him, to Amarle, hide the Batulach, the reason I'm taking a lower percentage is that the Daitel even Achmiel note, is in order that you don't take from the fruits on the tree. I mean, even though the Minag Medina is that you're entitled to a part of the fruits off the tree, that bonus, nevertheless, I took a lower percentage in order that you wouldn't take the fruits. Again, the same Kamash Malandi is that if the Minag Medina is this way, then if you want it to be different, right, then you've got to make an explicit statement that the reason you took less, right, of a percentage was a trade-off for the fact that he won't eat the peirot. If you do not make that explicit, he can say to him, I thought you took less because you thought I was a great sharecropper, so you will take less to get a better sharecropper like me. Right now, the Mer says, Makom shenagu lo laskir, ein maskirim. That's the next piece in the note. Mer says, pshita. Again, this is pshita, that the fact if they don't allow the fruits to be taken, then it's pshita, that should be that case. He says, "Lo tzricha dekule alma mekable, right beriva, that everybody else, right, takes it for a quarter. Vazaliu bekibla betilta. I mean, every other Balad Bayit takes a quarter. This Balad Bayit took more. He took a third. So ma'udutema. So I would have thought the opposite way around. Now, Amalei, hi, the sharecropper says to him, hi, the tofilucha. The reason I gave you a higher percentage than is normal to the Balad Bayit is that date of libi lanot." Because I thought for that trade-off, I would get a portion of the fruits. Kamash Malan, again, di bailei the frushele. Again, the same limud. That's, again, this is the third time that the Gemara has this limud. But the chiddush in all these cases that is despite the fact that there seems to be an unspoken deal here, which is that I'm taking a different percentage. And in my mind, the reason I'm allowing you to take that better deal is to give me a trade-off. And the Gemara says that if the Minag Medina, if the normal course of business is against that, what you're assuming, then unless it's explicit and articulated, then that is not considered the deal. And the reason you took a, what we call a lower or a different percentage, is because the because you either thought I was great or you wanted to work with me, meaning that you could come up with all sorts of reasons that the difference, but not asking for a particular trade-off. I don't have a good answer for you, because now the Gemara, I mean, I said it before, I don't have a good answer, but the Gemara now has the same, three times it's teaching the same din, which is that you have to, if you want to undermine the right, the din, or the norm, the normal business practice, you have to be explicit. And the Gemara now says that our Mishnah, plus the Bryson, these two locations teach you exactly the same din. So you have to come up, I assume you're going to have to come up with each case a chiddush why the person would think otherwise. But again, I see with you that here it's symmetrical, and so why shouldn't it, right, it should be obvious from one that it should be the same by the other. I don't have a good answer for it. Amar Rav Yosef b'Bavel, nehige d'lo yav tivna l'arisa. In Bavel, the teven does not go to the aris. I mean, that's the minhag, that's the normal business practice. Mar says, my nafkamino. What's the point? Of course, if that's the minhag, what's the difference? Mar says, the iikanish the ayiv on yofihu. No, because if you see that there are certain balabatim that do give the tevin to the arisim, don't learn from that that's the minhag medina. That's just these people happen to be nice guys. But from them, we're not going to establish that that is the business practice. Those are yotzei charig. Those are individuals. They don't become, or they don't stand. They don't set the standard. I'm Rabbi Yosef. Buchra v'tafta v'arkavata v'knei dechizra or kani dechizra the balabait. The landlord has to provide that. The owner of the land has to provide those items. V'chizre gufei darisa. And the chizre has to be provided by the tenant. So, or it's by the sharecropper. So what are these items? So we'll first go with Rashi's interpretation. Rashi says, Bukhra comes from the word b'chor. All right, so that means the first. The second word, which is tafta, comes from tafi, to add on, which means the second level. Varkavto are the shoulders, which would be the third level. So this was their minhag, which was that they used to dig a ditch around the field, and the dirt that was extracted from the ditch, they used to pile up on the side of the ditch to basically set the borders of the property and to provide protection for the property. So now, the doing this, they do it once, Bukhra is the first time, right? And then they do it additional level of dirt that they pile on top of it, which is the right tofato, and then they have the third one or tapto, and then the third one is the arkavto. So that has to all be provided by the Baal Bayit. Number two is the kani de chizra. Kani de chizra are basically the fence posts. The fence posts that the Baal Bayit has to provide. They are chizra, means it means thistles or thorn bushes. So the kani de chizra are the posts upon which you place the fencing or you place the thorns along the way. So those fence posts have to be provided by the Baal Bayit. Now, the chizra itself, the thorns themselves, gufe de arisa, they have to be, the chudve gufe have to be provided by the arisa. Klal de milsa, what's the general principle over here? That it is, kol ikar balma, that anything that is, so the word balma here means either sayag, which means that it's the fencing, in fencing or border, or the word, Rashi says the word Balma means shmira, to guard. And the modern day bolem means to, right, to halt or to break, right? So it means that the general protection of the property has to be provided by the Baal Bayit. That belongs to the Baal Bayit. Nituruta yeterta. If you want to have an additional, meaning that super security or better security, that is the arisa. Why? Because the aris, the sharecropper, part of his job, he has two jobs. One is lavot, to work the land, and the other one is lishmor, to protect the land and ensure that the crops are grown. So the Baal Bayit is obligated to provide the normal area around the land, or the normal protections around the land. But now if the aris says, you know, listen, it's to my benefit to have a much better fence, because then I'll have to do less shmirah here. So that's something that benefits the aris, the sharecropper himself, because it's diminishing the amount of work that or effort he'll have to put in to watch the field. So anything that comes to enhanced security or enhanced protection, that the aris will have to provide, because that's part of his job description, and it's diminishing what he needs to do for his job description. On the other hand, the basic property borders and security, that has to be provided by the Baal Bayit. On the other hand, the Rach, I just said to you before, we learned like Rashi, that Bukhra, Tafta, and Arkavto are about the piles that they make on the side. The Rabbeinu Chanan on the other side says that it means Charitz, Bukhra means Charitz, and Tafta means Ben Charitz. Means that they used to make around the field, outside of the fence, they used to dig ditches. So they were a primary and a secondary ditch, or the first ditch dig and the second ditch dig. So the Rach says it's about digging down, versus Rashi, who talks about it being the piling up. Okay, so now, Vamar of Yosef. Now, in terms of utensils that have to be provided for the working of the field, the mara, the spade, and here the zvila, which is, seems like the hoe, the davel and the bucket to draw the water, vizarnoka, which is a flask, in a place where they watered the fields with a flask instead of a bucket. The Baal Bayit, that the Baal Bayit has to provide. Those are basic utensils that come with the field that in order to work the field, and therefore the Baal Bayit has to provide them. Arisa avid beyore. On the other hand, the aris, the sharecropper, has to provide or make the beyore. I mean that he has to make the we'll call them the irrigation ditches that bring the water from the main river or main water source to the field, and then in the field to move it around, he has to ensure, he's the one who has to provide those irrigation ditches, because again, that's part of his work description. His work description is lavod ulishmar. Lavod means to water the field. So if the water comes because the river waters the field, then he needs to dig the ditch to get the water from the nahar to the field, because that's part of his job description. He prefers to carry the water, right? Then he can carry the water. Correct. We'll see that in a second. In the next Gemara, and after the next Mishnah. All right. Kashem shecholkim b'yayin kolchim b'zmurot b'kanim. Gemara says kanim avitayu. What are kanim doing here? I mean, it's. I explained to you in the Mishnah already what the conclusion of the Gemara is. But truthfully, if you have zmurot and kanim, they're right redundant. Means that whatever you pruned off or the branches of the tree of the vines. I mean, both of those are the wood that's cut down from the trees. So Gemara says, "Amri debei Rabbi Yanai kanim hamuchlakim, hamuchlakim shebehen mamidim netagifanim." That the kanim here are not from part of the tree itself, part of the vines themselves, but rather they are the stakes that hold up the vines. They are the trellises that hold up the vines. Ushneim misapkim etakanim. Gemara says, "Lamali." What do I need that statement in the Mishnah for? The Gemara says, Matan Kumar, it's explaining the reason they split the trellises or the stakes that hold up the vines is because Matam Shneim Chokim Bekanim Mishum Shneim Mesapkim Et Kanim. The reason they split those pieces of wood is because they both provide them. Since they go 50-50 in to provide them, when they're taken out, they also get a 50-50 split. All right, now, the next Mishnah. Hamakabel Sadeh Mechaveiro V'hi Beit HaShlachim. Person accepts a field from his friend, and it is a Beit Shlachim, which means that it's a field that requires watering, right? But it also, in this field, right, there is a Mayan, there's a spring there. So he has a field that needs to be watered, but the field also has a spring that does the watering for it. O Beit HaYilan, right, or he rented a field that had a tree in it. And as we saw before, the tree provides the sharecropper with a bonus that he gets the fruits of the tree. So he took on this field, and then it had a tree in it. Yavesha Mayan, the spring dried up, or Niktatz Hayilan, or the tree was cut down. Eino Menachal Lo Min Chikuro. Over here, he cannot deduct from the Chikur, he cannot deduct from the fixed payment he's going to make to him, because even though he rented a field that had a Mayan in it, and he rented a field that had a tree in it, that was not specified in the agreement. The agreement just says, I want this field, or Beit HaShlachim, and I want this Beit HaYilan. He didn't specify the one with the Mayan. He didn't make any mention of that in the deal. On the other hand, Im Amar Lo Chokor Li Stei Beit HaShlachim Zu, he says, this particular field, meaning this field with the Mayan, right? O Stei Beit HaYilan Ze, or this field with the tree in it, right, then Yavesha Mayanik Tzatzilam Minachalom Minichikuro. Then he can deduct from the payout because the field or what he's rented now or what he's basically paying for is not what he originally agreed to. So they have to adjust the payment to reflect the new circumstances. Gemara says, Hechidami, what's the case here that the Mayan dried up or the water source dried up over here? If the main water source of the city or of the area dries up, then amai enu menachalo min chikuro. Why doesn't he have a right to deduct? Because neimale, you can say to him, makat midinahi. It's not particular to me. It affects everybody. If it affects everybody, right, then it's not mazali garam. It's not my bad mazel caused this problem. It's because you live in the city or this property is found in the city. That's what the detriment is, because you're found here. If that's the case, you should be able to deduct. On the other hand, to Amra Papa, the case is the Yavesh Narazuta, that the smaller tributaries dried up. Now, whether that's the tributaries, real river tributaries, or if it was the Charit, the irrigation ditches weren't able to take water down to the fields anymore. Damarle, he says, the Bayale Yutulye Bidavla. The owner can say to him, listen, take a bucket and you can bring the water over here. I mean, there you could say Mazlo Garam, because he says, listen, the main water source, the city still has water. The fact that the water doesn't reach this field now, all right, so your job is to bring the water. Before you were lucky, there was something that brought the water here. Now, if it's not there, you're going to have to take a bucket and draw the water. So that's what you were saying before, Shaul, that if he wants to, he can take a bucket and draw it. I mean, that's the alternative. The alternative of not having the water get there is to have a bucket, take it there. So now, the Rav Papa makes a statement, part of which we'll address now, part of which will have to be left to the rest of the perek, which is Amar Rav Papa. Hane Tarte Matnita Kamaita. The first two Mishnayot we just read, we read the first Mishnah of the Perek and the one we just read, Mishkachala Ben Bechakrunuta Ben Bekablanuta. They apply both, right, by Chakirut and by Kablanut. They apply both by sharecroppers and by fixed pays. If either one of those relationships, they apply. Right, obviously, that's only in the first Mishnah, it's only the first part of the Mishnah, which is a Mekabelsta, Sadeh Mechaveiro, that the Minhagi imply both to the sharecropper and to the Choker. Obviously, that the splitting of the Tuvah and the Tevin is not applicable to the Choker, because there, when the Gemara is talking about splits, it's obviously talking about an Aris, the sharecropper, because the Choker has no rights in splitting. He doesn't split anything. He just pays a fixed amount, so there's nothing to split. He gets everything. So the splitting only refers to Aris. But now, in the next Mishnah, Mishnah, our Mishnah over here, even though Mekabel Steh Mechaveiro, even though it says there Menachei Lo Min Chikuro, even though it says you deduct a Mischikur, what Rav Papi is saying is that it would also apply to a sharecropper that you would take that down. We'll address that in a second because that doesn't make so much sense. Right, but Mikan Veilech, in the rest of the Perek, right, De'ita Bekablanuta, Leta Bechakranuta, De'ita Bechakranuta, Leta Bekablanuta. If a Mishnah says Chakirut, it means that is true only of Chakirut and not of Kablanut, not of, right, sharecropping. And if it's true of sharecropping, it's not true of a fixed percentage. So we'll explain them as we go through each Mishnah, we'll have to see that. Now, the problem is that, and we're going to see this a Mishnah later in the Perek, and Ratosus raises it here, is by a sharecropper, why does he have to deduct from his percentage? I mean, the whole idea of a percentage is that everybody loses. I mean, that's why. Everybody has skin in the game. So if the problem with something arises that changes the circumstances here, it equally affects the balabayid as it does the aris. So why should they have to change the percentage payout? Because the percentage payout, by definition, already takes into consideration any changes. So Tosfos asks the question, and later on, that's exactly what the Gemara says. If there's a change in circumstance, something happens, then you don't change the compensation percentage because both are affected by the, right, whatever the output or whatever detriment happens, it affects both parties. So if you look in the last Tosfos on the previous Amud, he says that, if you have some sort of locust that come along, that's only true of fixed pay. But if it's a percentage, it's a sharecropper, you can't take it down. Because both of them will be affected by the locust plague. They'll both get less. Over here in this Mishnah, you do take it down. Because you made an extra statement over here. You said Beit Shlachim Zu, right? So since you specified and said an extra lashon to specify this field, that means this field. Now, other things that happen, which are out of your control or out of the owner's control, that happen to affect the production, over there we're not going to adjust your pricing because you didn't make any specific stipulation about that. That'll be captured by the fact that you share in the percentage. Over here, because you made a specific statement which entitled you to this property with this item, then if the circumstances change, then not only will it affect the percentage? Both of you will be affected because you have both get a percentage of the field, but now you can change the actual percentage because you say that's not what we agreed to. If it's not what we agreed to, then you have a right to change because the terms of the, right, the terms of the agreement have changed, and now you can renegotiate because now you're really getting a different field than you had originally agreed upon. And the last thing here is Tosfos asks about why do you have to tell him that he has to bring it by a bucket? I mean, Tosfos says, what's the chava mina that not? That he shouldn't have to bring. Tosfos says, even if the whole field or all the fields in the area dried up, that he still has to bring it. As long as it's not a makat medina, then he's still required to bring the water. Even though he can claim, look, it's not just this field, it's like the whole bika, the whole valley dried up. But that's not enough. It has to be a makat medina in order to give him a tour. That's one possibility, Tosfos says. The other possibility says that the Gemara brought this answer for kablanut, for a resuit, for a sharecropper. So that he can't say, lo itasikba, I'm not going to deal with this. Because what he can say, by a sharecropper, I mean, as opposed to a choker, who's paying a fixed amount per year, the Baal Bayit doesn't care if he plants or he doesn't plant. So now what happens? The sharecropper says, oh my gosh, the field used to get, I can have ditches that brought water here, so I'll work the field. Now, I have to draw the water, it's not worth my time, it's not worth my effort to work the field, I'm just not going to work the field. Now, if he doesn't work the field, the Baal Bayit is affected by the fact that he doesn't work the field. Because when he doesn't work the field, then there's no output and then he won't get any percentage. So based on that, the Gemara says, no, he's not allowed not to work the field. That this is an obligation. Part of his job description is to water the field. If that's part of his job description, he's got to go draw the water, bring it here, and plant the field. I mean, that's not an excuse for not planting the field over here. Okay, we'll stop over here.